This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable and fixed blade knives and game processing kits. Now, in my bag this year, I had the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit. It comes in a very compact, handy carrying case, and one handle has the replaceable blade knife and the gutting blade. The other handle has the saw that comes with it. So I use the saw to split the pelvis, and I use the gut hook to open up the cavity and the blade to start cutting all the stuff out, right? So it makes cleaning a deer very simple, very easy, and the knife is sharp. And if you've ever had to gut a deer with a dull knife, we all know how much that sucks. So take a look at the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit and head on over to OutdoorEdge.com and enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% savings on your purchase. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And if this is the first time you've ever listened to the Hunting Gear Podcast, this podcast focuses on exactly what the title of this podcast is called, Hunting Gear and Equipment. And we cover everything from archery, gear and accessories, to bows, to arrows, to broadheads, to firearms, camo, boots, and everything in between. You name it, we talk about it here on this podcast. And again, if you are a first-time listener to the Hunting Gear Podcast, then you're in for a treat, because you're kicking it off with a badass episode. Today on the show, we have Kurt Geyer. And if you don't know Kurt, you've probably been living under a rock as far as outdoor podcasts are concerned, because he is the host of the Working Class Bow Hunter, a big favorite within the bow hunting and outdoors community. And it's an awesome podcast with a bunch of average Joes BS about their passion for the outdoors, really. And with that said, we're going to kind of take that flow into today's episode, and we're going to BS about gear. We're going to talk about some of the first bows we ever shot, some of the first equipment that we ever used, some of some products that are nostalgic for us. We talk about some gimmick products, what we look for in products, and it's a good old-fashioned BS session about hunting gear and equipment. So that's what today's episode is about. Before we get into this episode, though, we're going to do our little commercial block here. And the first commercial I want to kind of go through is The Average Conservationist. Now, if you haven't heard about the lifestyle brand, The Average Conservationist, basically what it is, it's a lifestyle brand, t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and a whole bunch of other really cool logo type material. I think they have some tumblers, they have stickers and stuff like that, but they have some really badass logos on their t-shirts and their hoodies and their hats. The cool thing, not only is the apparel really cool, the mission behind the company is really cool. They give 10% of all of their revenue to some form of conservation effort. And I think lately they've kind of been donating to the National Deer Association, which is a big one within, our hunting community, especially for whitetails and other quote unquote deer hunting. But 10% goes to, right off the bat, goes to a conservation effort. And that just tells you about the ownership of the company. Marcus Ewing is also the host of the Average Conservationist podcast on the Sportsman's Nation Network here too. So check out theaverageconservationist.com. And check out their awesome apparel, hoodies, hats, t-shirts. Really cool. Let's see. I got an old, dirty Average Conservation, one of their first runs, sitting on my desk right now. And it's been out with me into the timber multiple times, and it's still rocking and rolling. So it's durable. It's cool. Whatever. Just go check it out, theaverageconservationist.com. And at checkout, enter the discount code NFC10, and you get 10% off your purchase. Again, that's NFC10, and that's going to give you 10% off your purchase. The next commercial we're doing here, Lone Wolf Portable Tree Stands. I really don't know what else to say about them. You've heard me talk about them on this podcast about, you know, my favorite tree stand. You've heard me talk about them on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. But Lone Wolf Portable Tree Stands are, in my opinion, the best portable tree stand on the market. And I say that with about 13 years of experience behind that. So in 2006, I think it was either 2006 or 2007 when I picked up my very first Lone Wolf. I don't know if I bought it at a garage sale or I bought it off a buddy who was needing some money, but it changed the game for me. It allowed me to be more mobile. It allowed me to get in trees that I otherwise couldn't get in with a ladder stand. It allowed me to get deeper in. It's quiet. It can set up in crooked trees. And now it's just kind of like another appendage. It's a part of me. And I absolutely love it. I think we even talk about it in this podcast today. But head on over to lonewolfhuntingproducts.com and enter the discount code 9FC21, 9FC21, if you decide to purchase a tree stand. And you're going to get, I think it's $50 off of all purchases over $200, $200 or over. So that's, you're sitting at 25% there. You actually buy a tree stand, you're sitting at somewhere about 20% off. And that's a pretty good deal when it comes to a portable tree stand, a hang on like Lone Wolf. So check it out, lonewolfhuntingproducts.com. Now we can get into today's episode with Kurt Geyer of the Working Class Bowhunter. All right, on the phone with me today from the Working Class Bowhunter podcast, Kurt Geyer. Kurt, what's up, man?
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let me just ask you this. Are you a turkey guy, or are you a turkey guy only during turkey season?
Typically, I'm a turkey guy only during turkey season.
Yeah.
But I find this year I'm a little more of a turkey guy before turkey. I have a little more lead time on my turkey season this year than I've felt in years past.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Why is that?
If you want me to be brutally honest, they're just not that cool. I mean, and I don't mean to sound kind of harsh when I say that. Like, they're cool. I think turkeys are really, really cool when they're close enough and they're drumming and you got them coming in and things are getting awesome and just that exciting part. But other than that, I'm kind of just like, yeah, it's something to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It'd be different if they had antlers.
Right. I'll tell you this. When I drive down a country road and I see a deer in the field, I don't care if it's a doe or a spike or whatever. I'm slowing down to take a look at it. If I see a strut and tom in the same field, I'll probably just turn my head and be like, oh, cool, turkey strutting, and then keep driving.
Yeah, they're only, I mean, I don't mean to take anything away from turkeys. Like, you know what I mean? I know you don't either, but it's, they're cool. They're beautiful. They're fun to hunt with a bow. I think decapping, you know, using the decap heads on them is like probably the cool thing to do in archery, and it's challenging that way. But yeah, it's just not the same, you know. For me, birds just aren't as interesting as like a big game animal.
Yeah,
that's or a predator or something, you know.
That's a fact. What's on the agenda? Are you only hunting Illinois this year, or are you going to be bouncing around to other states?
So my plans are, I'm going back to Wyoming for a spring bear hunt at the end of May this year. Eric and I from the podcast are going out there. I'm planning on doing a Wyoming mule deer hunt in the same area. And then I'm planning on this one's kind of in a gray area right now. I'm planning on going back for mountain lion, between Christmas and New Year's, but we'll see. I got to see how that's all going to pan out.
Yeah. I heard those mountain lion hunts are pretty intense, man.
You know, I had no interest in doing one. But last year when we were on our bear hunt, our guide out at Double Diamond Outfitters in Wyoming, Trey, he was showing me videos of some of the mountain lion hunts and just the effort you have to put into it. And then just how, like, just the adrenaline rush of it.
Yeah.
That's honestly what got me basically more interested in it because I got to see the real raw videos just on his phone that he took, not nothing on TV or whatever.
Right.
And I'm like, man, I think I'd really like to do that. So I've been talking with him a little bit about trying to go out there and do it on snowmobiles with the dogs and stuff like that and get after it. So we'll see. I hope it all works out. I think it will. But it's just, it's kind of far out. Like I'm more focused on the bear hunt and then we'll go from there, you know?
Yeah. Let me ask you this about bear hunting. I, in the past, have never been interested in doing a bear hunt where, you know, you just sit over a bait pile all day and wait for them to come in. What was your very first bear hunting experience like?
Yeah, so I will say I agree with you with what you just said. I went out to Wyoming, Western Wyoming, to do it. And I went with a couple of guys, three of my buddies, that have all done Canadian bear hunts. And all killed really good bears. And I know that can be a challenging hunt as well. This bear hunt interests me for a few reasons more than like the Canadian, you know, fish all day, leisurely, get drunk, and then go out or do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And then go out and sit in a ladder stand and you know you're going to see 5-10 bears a night and get a shot, whatever you want to shoot at. This one is like a backcountry style. You horseback into the mountains, back into where your bait is, and then you get in the tree and hunt that way.
Yeah.
So there's more adventure and a little more effort to it than, and I'm not saying all, I've never been on a Canadian hunt, but from what I have heard from my close friends that have done it a couple times, it's more of an adventure just being out in that area from the camp to the horses to by the time you even get to the hunt.
Yeah.
So that's why it appealed to me a little more. And from what I understand, I will do a Canadian bear hunt, so I have the experience and I want to do it. But it seems like it's more of a challenging hunt hunting the mountain bears rather than the Canadian bears that basically once the truck leaves, here they come.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
That's how it felt from everyone talking about it to me.
Yeah. There's so many other species I think that I want to, focus on. Than bear. However, I say that with an asterisk because I feel like if I am going to do a bear hunt, I saw a Jim Shockey episode on YouTube or something like that, where he would take a boat up into a creek, like basically a small stream or river that's running out of the mountains into the ocean. And all he would do is slowly hike up that creek and he would run into some bears and that's how he hunted. I think like for me personally, that kind of hunt would be a little bit more interesting than your typical over bait tree stand type hunt.
Yeah, I get that. I get that for sure. That would be cool. A couple of my buddies go out to Montana and do spot and stalk spring bears. That's just what they've told me, that it's like a 3% success rate and it's just real challenging, which is cool. You know, even cooler if you get it done, but you know, I don't know. I'm in a weird spot with some of my hunting goals that I kind of just want to try a little bit of everything.
Right.
So maybe one day I'll try hunting bears like that. I'm glad I got to kill my first black bear was a color phase and I did it in Wyoming, which is a little different for most people you meet in the Midwest that normally go to just straight north up into Canada and kill them there, you know?
Right.
So it's, I'm not crazy about like dogs on bears, like you see out east or deer or dogs on deer. I don't really think I'll ever do that.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's all experience. It's all fun. So,
yeah. Yeah. I tell you what, I think I started my expansion later than most people have, because here I am 40 and I don't have a ton of Western type hunts under my belt. But I tell you, the one thing right now that I am straight up obsessed with is mule deer. I want to kill a mule deer. I don't care what it is. I want to kill a mule deer so bad. Like, that's all I think about.
Yeah. They're cool, man. They're just, I think it's because they're so similar in a way and look as like a whitetail, but they're not.
Yeah.
I'm more and more leaning to where you're at with that, especially seeing some of my buddy Clint's just giant muleys he's killed in some pretty tough units. And it's just cool seeing like what would be the G2 on a whitetail. It could be like 18 inches.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just kind of fascinating. Frame.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I'm growing more and more into that.
Yeah. All right. So, I really didn't have a certain direction of how I was going to take this podcast today, but something kind of popped up into my head, and I kind of want to go all the way back to when you were kind of introduced to hunting, or maybe even around the time where you started, you know, you were hunting by yourself. So did you come from a hunting family, or were you kind of a solo guy?
Yeah, kind of. So my dad grew up doing like small game hunting and stuff like that. I had uncles that were really into deer hunting. So my dad started deer hunting with me when I was like 9 or 10, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
And then, so I was young, kind of a hunting family, sort of not.
Yeah.
A lot of relatives, like uncles and great uncles and cousins that did it.
Yeah.
But I've been hunting. I would just say I've been hunting my whole life, you know?
Yeah. You know, in today's world, there is this, like, and I know you talk about it on your podcast a lot, but there's so much energy and focus on the actual gear that people use. And it sometimes mm-hmm. it drives me nuts. But here I am, I'm also the host of the Hunting Gear podcast. But I want to talk about some of the first hunting gear that you ever used. Do you remember like your first outfit, your first camo, your first bow or gun or anything like that?
My first gun was like a Mossberg 520 gauge, of course. You know, that's a lot of people's first gun.
Yep.
I had a handful of bows that were just like package big box store bows because my parents didn't know how serious I was going to be into it, but ended up, you know, really liking it. But I think the first real legitimate, like off the shelf at a pro shop bow was a Hoyt Ultra Sport.
Okay.
And then I think, I don't know, my dad bought at the same time, like, what was it? Oh man, I'm drawing a blank on the brand for some reason. I can't believe it. Reflex, an old Reflex bow. It was like Hoyt's kind of like under brand, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I don't
remember those. So I remember that being my first bow. Camo was just probably anything I could get at Walmart.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, I had, you know, of course, the Whisker Biscuit, Beam and Arrows just out of a box from the pro shop, stuff like that. Just old True Fire Release, just whatever I could get to get me going type of thing.
Right.
But that, I mean, that's what I remember. You know, I could be way off on that.
Right.
But that's how I remember it anyway.
Do you I think right now, and I'm not 100% sure, Oneida is more focused like in bow fishing right now, but one of my very first bows that I ever had was an old Oneida. It was old, and those things just look just like completely different type of system. Right. Have you ever shot an Oneida?
I've never shot one. I know what you're talking about. I do see them in like the bow fishing scene. They're like kind of a recurve, but like the limbs look like two piece limbs or something.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. Just something.
Is that what I'm thinking? Am I thinking that correctly?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And then they have like a whole different little set of cable where it's like, there's two sets of limbs that meet the riser. And then there's a whole different little cable system where those two meet. And it looked, yeah, like you said, it looks like this from a different planet recurve compound type.
It looks like if Matt Busbis made a recurve. That's what it looks like.
that guy. that's funny.
I was gonna laugh out of you.
Oh dude, it did. Congratulations. What a douche. Anyway, so yeah, I can remember that Oneida, and I remember being so old, and you know, back then I wasn't even thinking about sound, right? Like how sound, you know, would affect deer. But I remember drawing back on some does, and it was so noisy, just like, and then when I'd shoot it, they were jumping the string before the arrow even left the bow.
Isn't that funny, man? Yeah. How things change.
Like, oh dude,
you go to shoot an older bow compared to like the new bows. We talked for hours about this with T-Bone this past weekend, and and my buddies Chandler and Jordan Ginsburg, we're all sitting around talking about old school bows and stuff like this. And I realized, like, I'm sort of spoiled that I got lucky that my dad dove into it the same time I did, pretty much. So we bought our bows together. So I started from, like, my age bow new, whereas I didn't get, like, a 10-year-old used bow.
Yeah.
So I didn't know, like, a lot about the details on, like, what the cables were and all these other just janky stuff that the evolution of the compound bow has gone through. And, like, T-Bone was telling us all these stories about, like, steel cables. And there used to be like an odometer on your bow riser. It'd tell you when you're getting close to 1,000 shots, because that's all the cables were good for before you took a steel cable across the face, like in the middle of the tournament. And I'm like, man, archery in the day did not sound like a good time. Like, I would just be shooting a recurve and be like, no, I'm good on that compound stuff. So I see why old school guys hate compounds. I get that to a point.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what. So I shot that Oneida for a while, and then I got a garage sale. Like, I think it was a Bear, and it was a little bit better, because I believe it actually had like cams on it at that point, but none of the arrows matched that I had. So in 2005, I got my finger cut off in 2005, and with the insurance money, I went to Shields and I bought my first ever like. I'm going to call good bow by myself. And I bought a Bowtech Tribute, like, what is that, 14 years ago. And I just remember pulling it back and shooting it for the first time. And I thought I was, like, it just felt so good compared to what I was shooting. I thought I was going to go out and slay every giant in the woods.
Give you the confidence you needed.
Right. It was nuts, man. And do you ever, like, do you ever remember a piece of maybe a bow, let's just say, that you were shooting all these older models or whatever, and then all of a sudden you jumped into like something 4 or 5 years down the road, and that was just like, holy cow, this technology compared to the previous model just blows it away?
Yeah, I mean, not really, not like a hard line, but kind of. Because I went from that Hoyt Ultra Sport, and then I shot that for years, and then I sold it and bought a Hoyt X-Tech, which was like the flagship bow at the time. And I thought that thing was like, because I saw Michael Waddell and them guys shooting it back then, I thought I was like the shit because I had this flagship bow.
Right.
But I would probably say the big difference would be like when it went more to a parallel limb type bow, I had a Hoyt Maxxis 31. And I shot that for a while, and so that was probably from the X-Tech to the Maxxis was probably like the big jump in bow technology or bow feel evolution for me. Which I know there's old timers that might listen and kind of laugh at that, but that's just my era, you know what I mean?
Right, absolutely. It's funny, even as recent as the last 5 years, I didn't get a brand new bow in 2020, and I didn't get a brand new bow in 2019, right? My last new bow was 2018, and I was shooting this Prime. And then, so I shot this, Prime for 2 or 3 years. I can't remember. And then I'm not touching any new, technology. And so I go to the sporting goods store, and I shoot some of their, you know, a whole bunch of different brands and models from different manufacturers. And dude, I'm even as you know, a short period of time, like 2 years in the archery compound game, it's night and day difference. It's crazy what they're doing with bows now.
It is, man. We're spoiled to be able to like experience it. But I know what you're saying. I've done that where I'll keep a bow for a while and I'll jump back and shoot it. Or like my buddy will have a bow I used to have, and I'll be like, let me shoot that thing for shits and gigs. I'm like, man, it's like there's hand shock there that I didn't feel when I owned it. But right. Now that I have a newer bow, it seems terrible.
Right. Right. So you're walking away with, man, glad I got rid of that one.
Right. Which, you know, in reality, it's nothing.
Right.
It doesn't even matter, but it's just kind of funny how you get used to it. Just like cars, man. You drive a new truck, you don't want to drive your 2002 Silverado anymore.
Right. That's funny. So when it comes to like hunting gear and equipment, I can remember back in the day when it would start to get cold out, And this is before I was educated on like things like merino wool or wool socks. And I was like cotton everything, right? Like five or six different hooded sweatshirts all stacked on top of each other. I looked like the younger brother from The Christmas Story walking to the tree stand, getting so hot. And then I would just instantly get cold right away. When I started to settle down, do you remember a time when like you were just like all of a sudden you had this, like you quote unquote upgraded your gear, maybe with your own money, once you started making your own money and you're like, God, I should have been doing this years ago.
Yeah, kinda. I started out doing the same thing that you did. I remember taking blankets with me when I'd sit on the ground, right, like that. But I had my first, and I kind of felt this way, how you said you felt like you were going to walk out and kill every Boone and Crockett. I got an old Scentlock suit and wore that thing for years. I had like the full season jacket or whatever they called it. And I was pretty good layering some stuff underneath that. And that was like nicer quality, but I don't know, man. I kind of let myself be miserable when I whitetail hunt. Like I kind of sit freezing cold all the time because I just get annoyed with wearing too much.
Yeah.
So I just don't like the bulkiness. I'm worried about it. It's aggravating to me, especially once you put like a tree stand harness on, then a vinyl harness and all that. And so I usually go out and suffer because I'm an idiot. I don't know. Like hand warmers, I'll put good socks on, good boots, but I like to wear as slim as a top as I can, so it's not getting in my way.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I'm miserable. I don't wear gloves really at all, and that's no fun. That's a miserable time, and my fingers are paying for it. They're pretty jacked up, but I just don't want that. I don't practice with my gloves, and I don't like having that in my way, so
yeah.
I avoid it.
Yeah, I'm always that guy who I bought one of those. I don't know. I don't even know what you call it. Like a fanny pack for your hands, or like a muff. Is that what they're called? A muff?
I call it a muff. I don't know if that's appropriate or not. That's what I call it.
So, you strap it around your waist, put my hands in there. And so I try not to wear gloves, and then, I'll just sit there and then I'll take it out. So that's what I use. I don't practice in gloves either. So it's either take the gloves off when something starts to come in, or just, now that you mentioned it, what I'm about to say is even more funny. I just pull it out of the muff, and then I start the shot process.
Well, I think, I had one of those, but then I find I get annoyed with like having it buckled around my waist. It's another thing in the way. But I think, when it's brutal cold, it's worth bringing that along and then buckling it in place like while you're up in the tree. But, that, and I have I think it's a Zippo brand. That's a double check. It's like a rechargeable Zippo hand warmer, and you can control like the levels on it. And that thing will burn your hands. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I don't even know how much they are. A guy has like a stocking stuffer one year and kind of laughed at it. And then, started using it. I'm like, oh shit. So I'm going to buy another one for each pocket. Save you money on hot hands or whatever,
Yeah, that's a good idea. Another product that I've kind of, I don't know if you've had any experience with this. I haven't yet, but it's something that I want to look into. And that is, like a garment, like a chest, like a vest that has like battery powered and it brings heat. So it's, something similar.
Yeah.
It's just, have you ever used one of those?
Yeah, I have two of them actually. I have a Snap-on brand one, and it looks kind of like the old like long underwear material, the white like I don't know,
long johns.
It's like a
deal.
It's like a long john material. That's like the inside of it, but it's like a hooded sweatshirt, and then the battery is like where your right kidney is.
Yeah,
and that cuts out a little bit of the cold. And then I have a Milwaukee heated jacket, which is great. It's camouflage, and I wear that either over a regular hoodie, or if it's super cold, I'll double up. But the bad thing is the Milwaukee battery is in the same spot as the Snap-on battery's at. So while you're sitting in a tree or standing, you got this big bulky battery cluster the way.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's better than freezing your ass off.
Yeah.
One issue I had this year with that Milwaukee, I did wear it out late October, one of the cold days we had, because remember our October was like cold and perfect, then our November sucked.
Yeah.
I wore it out one morning with basically just a regular hooded sweatshirt underneath it. And from being in the tree stand and having my harness on, my harness unplugged the battery. And then I had to like take off half of my harness, take off my bino harness, unzip, half unzip, reach around all awkward because I've been sitting, my muscles are cold. So I'm getting like weird arm cramps. I'm trying to reach around and plug this battery back in. While I'm doing it, here comes this big buck coming through the standing corn right at me. And then he just basically caught me with my pants down.
Oh, shit.
So that's one of the takeaways. If I was going to write Milwaukee about it, I'd be like, hey, put that battery in a better spot for people that are sitting in trees.
Yeah, you cost me a big buck. And meanwhile, they're like, dude, we're a tool company. Like, we don't give
don't
a shit.
Don't make camouflage clothing.
Right, right.
other than that, they're great.
Yeah, man. I'm definitely looking into one of those right now because just like you said earlier, I don't like, especially when it gets real cold. A couple years ago, the rut was like 10 degrees in November.
Yeah.
It was brutal out. And I was wearing almost every piece of clothing that I had just to tough it out, basically. And I want
like a marshmallow. Up there.
Right, right. And I want one of those, vests or jackets, and then I can throw a shell over top of it and just, you know, look like shrink my profile. Because you start putting on all, like, I have a really big winter coat. It's almost like a sleeping bag top from Element. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome, but I wish I didn't have to wear it. And I typically don't.
Right.
But, man, I guess you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, you do have to be comfortable. You know, if I know I'm going to sit for a long time, I'll wear a lot. You know what I mean? I'm smart about it to a point.
Yeah.
Even though I get annoyed, I'd rather be a little annoyed and warm than dying up there, but knowing like deer are going to move.
Yeah.
But I would say my recommendation, and I'm an idiot, so you don't have to listen to me. I would get one of the heated hoodie from Milwaukee or whoever. That's something that you can have tight to you and then put a shell over it.
Yeah.
Because the heat's like more on your skin than through like the Milwaukee. It's a actual jacket.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's not touching your skin. It doesn't keep you as warm as if like you had a set of like a Long John shirt or whatever that had the heating element in it.
What are those batteries? How long do they last?
The Snap-on battery it'll last you a good sit. I think the Milwaukee one, I don't know. I've never had it like full blast the whole time. Cause there's three different, like there's like a low, medium and high setting.
Yeah.
I think it'll last you a good day if you had on like the medium setting. I don't know. I guess I've never really tested. I'm always worried about killing the battery too early.
Yeah.
And then kind of being hosed when it matters, you know, like I'll get in, I'm warm from my walk in, and then I'll let myself start to get a little cold before I even turn it on low.
Yeah.
And then I'll kind of let myself get warm from there. Cause you know, typically if you're in an afternoon sit, it's getting colder as you sit. So.
Right. Right. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. That's a product that I'm definitely going to be looking into, but then again, you know, here it is, November, it's 70 degrees outside and I won't even use it.
Right. And you're like, man, I just spent $250 on some
right. Something jacket, I'm probably just going to wear it to scoot my driveway.
Yeah, they are nice, man. You know, I get up early for work, and it's kind of nice having that. You know, I don't have heated seats or anything in my vehicle, so it's nice having that jacket. You get it cooking, and
yeah,
that's cool. Because by the time your truck's heated up, you can shut the jacket off, and it's good for a while.
Yeah. Do you run any kind of special base layers, like merino wool or anything like that?
Sort of. I have – I don't know if it's 100% merino wool, but I have some base layers from, I think I have a Badlands merino base layer, like from bottoms. And then I have some stuff from True Timber that seems pretty nice. It's not merino though. It's more like the performance like style. I don't know what it's made. It's some sort of blend.
Yeah.
And then I wear a lot of like the black Ovis, boxer briefs and merino and some of the, like the long underwear.
Yeah. When you,
which I'm told that is like a knockoff of like the Sitka base layers, or it is, but it's just rebranded for Black Ovis. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah. I don't know anything about that. Do you, like, once you started moving to, I guess, an official, you know, every base layer says moisture wicking, no matter what it's made out of, right? So when you started messing around with merino wool, did you notice a difference, like cooling, like the moisture actually wicking away from your body and things like that?
I think so, yeah, 100%. Yeah. Unless it's like some sort of placebo trick they're playing on all of us to spend more money,
right.
It's worth it. But yeah, I'd say so. I'm kind of a snob now because all I wear on a daily basis is those black Ovis boxer briefs.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if I wear like regular Hanes or cotton, like under anything, I just feel like I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I'm spoiled. So now I have to wear the black Ovis boxers and all that. On a daily.
Yeah.
So I'm spending like $40 for a pair of boxers because I'm an idiot, but they last a long time.
Yeah. This is going to sound weird because I bought some Sitka. They weren't the merino wool boxer briefs, but I ended up buying a pair of the Sitka. I think it's their synthetic line or I'm trying to think something light. Like it's what their non-merino base layers are made out of. So I bought like a handful of those, and this is going to sound disgusting, but I took them out on my first ever Western hunt. And, you know, when I was messing around with them on my hikes, I wasn't really hiking a lot compared to what I was doing when I went out on this elk hunt. And dude, by the end of the day, the crack of my ass was so chapped just because of how they fit or what they do, not really any moisture. It's almost like sometimes you want a little bit of that ass sweat to stick around and it was not there. And man, my ass was chapped so bad that I ended up just throwing my regular boxer briefs, my Hanes or whatever the other brands are from Walmart back on. And they treated me much better.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Spent all that money for a rash.
That's right. Right. And, you know, just put a little Vaseline on it and you're back to hiking.
Did it look like the Sitka logo, your rash?
No, it did not. It did not.
Oh.
It looked like a flat bill cap.
With his ears tucked in, you got like a discount code. Messed up.
We got jokes today. We got jokes today.
It just gets worse if you keep listening.
I know, right? I know. So do you have like from a nostalgia standpoint, do you have a favorite pair or like a favorite hunting piece of equipment that you've just continued to use year after year after year?
Man, I wish I had a really good answer for that question because I love that type of stuff.
Yeah.
No, not really. I have hunting, like when I see like old real tree patterns from when I was a kid, that kind of brings me back. Like I wish I still had a bunch of my old stuff. Like I still have some old, like cool real tree crew necks, like in old real tree hardwoods when it first came out that are pretty cool. I wish I had a cooler answer for you, man. I don't. I've kind of always upgraded every 4 or 5 years, like completely fresh on everything just because I just want new stuff or whatever, you know what I mean? And then I'll give my old stuff to buddies or cousins or sell it to my buddies or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I'll say this, man. I had a grunt call and I think I had that thing for 12 to 14 years. No joke. And it got to the point where if it was too cold and I don't know, the reed would freeze and it wouldn't work. But then all I had to do was just kind of blow in it, get that thing warmed up with my breath and then it would work again. But I'm telling you, to this day, I don't even know the brand of it. I don't know who made it, whatever. But to this day, that grunt call was the most realistic dominant buck type call that I have ever used. And when I, I ended up losing it. It was black, straight black. And when I ended up losing it, I was so pissed that I had to go to the store and buy another grunt call. So for about 45 minutes in, I don't even know, it was a Bass Pro Shop. No, it was a Gander Mountain. for 45 minutes one day in a Gander Mountain, I'm opening up all these different grunt calls and I'm blowing them, and I'm doing this little session in their store. And one of the, you know, like some high school kid, he's like, I don't think you're supposed to open those. I'm like, dude, you have no idea what you're talking about. Go away. Like, just get away from me. I was so pissed that I lost it. And I ended up having to buy something that I didn't want, but it was the closest thing that I ever had to, you know, closest thing to the original. You know,
that's hilarious. Cause that's definitely pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Now people arrest you.
Right.
But one call we talk about often on the podcast, and my buddy Austin Chandler, he still uses this call. I have it somewhere. I guess the one thing would be a grunt call, and it would be, remember when the Drury came out with that mad buck growl or whatever they called it?
The buck roar?
It was the buck growl when they launched it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it had clear plastic, was like the whole thing was, you could see through it, but it had the long tube. The buck roar, I think, was Primo's version a couple years later.
I got you.
That call would probably be the one. I have it somewhere, but I mean, that call is probably called in more big bucks for me and my dad, and Chandler still uses it. He still killed deer off it this year, and he's had it since it came out, which, hell, I don't know, 2005 to 2008 is probably when that came out. I don't remember exactly.
Did that have the adjustable like slide where you could go doe, like fawn, doe, young buck, old buck on it?
No, not that one. I don't think it did. I think it was just the clear plastic tip, and then it had like the long black like grip to it, and it was just its own standalone. Like, that was its call, was the buck growl.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's what it did. And they had, when you would buy it, it would come with like this little miniature DVD. It was like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
And it would, you'd put it in like, and you didn't realize it had these, but the DVD player had the full disc groove, and then it had the little baby disc groove that you would drop the little one in and put it in. And it would just be like a tutorial and stories about how awesome the call was.
Right.
I don't know. I just remember getting those. I probably still have them around in my hunting DVD collection bin somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That would be the one I think that I'd have to pick out, but it's not one I'm like actively reaching in my pack every season for my trusty call.
Right.
Like, it's not on that level or anything.
Yeah.
Super lame answer. I wish I had a better one, man, because it would be cool to have something that was with me from the beginning or something.
Yeah. I can remember, you know, just doing the single and turning bucks around with that old call. And then of course, when I go to try it with my new call, and I'm like, you son of a bitch. If you were my other call, you would have brought that deer in, you know, like just getting so pissed about it.
Confidence in your equipment, man. It's,
that's right.
Who knows?
That's right.
You need to, damn, that sucks. So it's gone forever. You lost it in the woods.
Man, I tell you what, here's what's going to happen. My luck is I'm going to, you know, start running and gunning in one of these properties that I haven't hunted in a while, and I'm going to find it. I know what property it's on, but I just don't know where I lost it at. And it's one of those big CRP type properties where you're walking back like hundreds of yards in CRP to get to like this little drainage. And so it could have been in there. It could be anywhere, but I think I know where I lost it. I mean, I looked for it. I went out and I looked for it, and now it's probably been plowed over or something like that.
Been in a CRP burn or something.
Yeah, absolutely. did you ever, or maybe you still today, are you a bleat call guy? Has that ever worked for you?
Simple answer, no. In more detail, when I was a kid, I had the old Primo's bleat can that had the Beady Buck on it. Remember that one?
Yep.
And I'd sit there and go, meh, like I was doing something big, and I had small bucks to me at the time, big bucks, but now if I see a big buck, bleed is not on my radar.
Yeah.
Typically.
Yeah, man. I
just find like I'm so inconsistent with it. And there a lot of the bleed calls are hard to control.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the one where you had to put your thumb over it, over the back end, and then you turn it upside down and then turn it back up again. And so when you would turn it back up again on the right side, that's when it would make the doe bleat or the bleat call.
Yep.
Yeah. And I can remember one time I was hunting this, this bedding area was kind of like a circle. And I, on the far side, I watched this shooter kind of cruise through this back end. And I'm like, oh God, it's the rut. I'm pull out the brand new bleat call. And I, you know, did it and it meep or whatever. And it got its attention. And it also got the attention of the doe group that was closer to me. And what'd they do? They just came in to investigate, got downwind of me, blew out the whole thing. I never saw that buck again. I was so pissed. And I think.
And you chucked that bleat call into the ravine.
No, I put it in my backpack and I was like, I would have, but I just bought it. So maybe I won't. And I don't think I've ever used a bleat call since then.
You just kind of have to have that in like your old like hunting equipment tote.
You're right.
That way if someone sees it, like, what's that old thing? You have like this piece of shit bleat call that you bought and that you have that story to tell. That's just, I think that's just part of buying hunting equipment to a point.
Yeah. Did you ever fall for any type of gimmicks?
Oh yeah, I'm sure, man. I was so into like outdoor television as a kid growing up hunting that, you know, I don't know. It kind of went both ways. There was some stuff I laughed at when I saw it on TV and then some stuff I'm like, I mean like that growl, which ended up working for us. So I don't know if I consider it a gimmick, but like the marketing on that had me in. Like remember when Rage Broadheads like hit the scene real big and like that was like the big buzz. Like I fell for that marketing, but people love Rage, you know?
Yeah.
I think they're probably a good head. But gimmicks, I don't know. There is one for sure that I'm not thinking of. I'm trying to think.
So
I don't know. What about you?
Back in the day, this one blew my mind that people would actually take this into the tree with them. And it was right around the time when I started getting serious. You know, you got your, I was 26 at the time. So that is when I cannonballed into archery and I started like being observant in the woods, getting serious about all that stuff. And I remember going to a lot of trade shows back when I was with White Knuckle Productions, you know, back in those days. Mm-hmm. And there was this guy selling a product called the Deer View Mirror.
Oh my God, dude.
Do you remember that?
I was going to bring that up. Talking. Yes, I do remember it.
Oh my God. And the whole point of this is you don't have to stand up and turn around. It wraps around the tree and you put it out in front of you. And that way you don't have to move. You can just look at the deer view mirror and see everything that's coming behind you. And this guy at this trade show, I don't know, like if he's alive still, like good for him, but he looked like he had, I don't know if I can put a face like description of what this guy looked like. It was, I just took every dollar. I cashed out my 401k. I did, you know, like I did all of this and this product has to work. My wife's already mad. She's already divorced me. This product has to work. And that was the kind of guy who was working this booth. And he was just trying to, you know, grind out and sell this to everybody at these trade shows. And it wasn't working. And I was like,
did that happen to be at Illinois Deer Classic back in the day when it was in Bloomington?
Yes. Yep.
I remember it.
Yeah. And then I see the guy as we're shutting down the show. I walk out and, you know, getting ready to go back to the car and leave on that Sunday, you know, and here he's out. Like, it looks like he's loading every single thing that he brought in into the show back into his truck. And I'm just like, oh man, some ideas are just shitty, you know?
I remember that. I remember seeing at the show back in the day, but there was actually ads for it in magazines too.
Yeah.
So you're probably right. He probably missed, I don't know how many alimony checks to his ex-wife and he's like putting in ads in some whatever magazine.
Big
but
buck
would you
magazine.
Rather have that or would you rather buy the Acorn Cruncher?
Dude, I used to buy an Acorn Cruncher and give it to people as jokes, right? But
take this with you. You're going to need it.
Yeah, exactly. Hey man. So I had it handed to me by some buddies, right? As a joke. And I had it in my pocket and I was just like, all right, again, it comes with one of those mini DVDs, popped it in, watched it. And here's this guy all serious, just like, all right, here's how you do it. It's basically two, 2 2-liter bottle caps with slits cut in them.
Yeah.
So,
that's awesome.
I remember these does are kind of working their way in, and I started doing it. The first crunch, they just pegged me in the tree, and there was no calmness of eating acorns. It was just pegged, ran away. And I was just like, this dirty, dirty dog gave me this. And obviously it was a gimmick, but those are the two biggest ones that I can think of, was the deer view mirror and the acorn cruncher.
Didn't Hunter Specialties make the acorn cruncher?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. And I think they still sell it.
That's hilarious. I'm going to buy one just for the effort on their end. Like, that's right. A hustle in some weird way. It's a hustle.
Yeah. Right. Just like, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are really educated, you know, understand that products necessarily don't kill big deer, right? It's the strategy. It's, mm-hmm. it's all that other stuff. But, you know, before the podcasts, before social media, the whole hunting industry was made up of people just blowing products out of proportion of how, like, dude, you want to kill the biggest buck in your timber or even your county? Here, man, use the acorn cruncher. I guarantee you it's going to work, right? All these guarantees on products. So
yeah, nowadays, like, instead of back in the day when it was like a wisetail, you could look somebody up. If they're like the inventor of the acorn cruncher, talk about, oh, yeah, it kills all the big bucks. You can just look at their Instagram and be like, ah, no, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
And then move on. You know what I mean?
Right. So, right.
It's there was something cool about the mystery of, like, you need this because it kills the big bucks. But if you know it was bullshit, you knew
right.
it was. And
right.
It's kind of funny. Like, I don't wish any of these products away because it's entertaining.
Right. That's a fact, man. Well, I tell you, this is what I love about hunting products, gear, equipment, all that stuff, is like watching the evolutions, kind of like what we've talked about. And I remember the very first tree stand that I ever sat in was a L bracket. I don't know what even, like, the only thing that I can compare it to is sometimes when a guy's doing a framing job and they'll put metal L brackets on the end of stud walls or something like that. That is what this tree stand was made out of. So just a bigger version of that. And it had all these holes in it, but it was welded to the tree. It's been sitting in that tree for probably 15 years. It's all grown into the tree and stuff like that. And I just love that, you know, and obviously, you know, you use more advanced tree stands now, or the tree stands that were the first climbing tree stand was actually made out of plywood and steel compared to what we have today. So I just find that very interesting.
Yeah. I think there's something cool about old tree stands and the evolution of it all, because I mean, all tree stands are fun. Like, I consider myself sort of not really a collector of tree stands, but I have some old school ones. Like, one's a plastic platform with a chain on it, but it's made out of like that framing stuff you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think I've hunted out of it once, but I'm like sort of scared of it. Cause it's probably older than me, you know?
Right.
But yeah, tree stands are cool to watch, like the evolution of it and where it's going and how light they're getting. But I'm kind of, there's a point where I'm over it though too.
Yeah.
With the whole tree stand, mobile hunter, saddle scene. Like, it's all cool. All interesting, like, and I get it, and I'll continue to pay attention, but I'm just not going to look that hard at it.
Yeah, I feel you. And you said it earlier, man, confidence in your equipment. That's where I'm at right now. Like, everybody's like, oh, hey, Dan, why aren't you using a saddle? It's like, because I have 15 years of a lone wolf on my back, and it's like just a part of me now. It's so easy, and I guess I'm getting old or stubborn or something, and I just don't want to change.
Dude, I'm 100% with you, because everyone, we joke around a lot on our podcast. Like, we're super sarcastic, and just everyone just thinks we hate saddles, and we don't. It's easy to joke about. And, you know, Austin in our crew, he's killed a really good buck out of a saddle. Whatever. If you want to do that, that's cool. But I'm the same as you, man. Like, if I'm going to grab a stand, it's going to be that cast platform, like an Alpha or something like that, like that size, or whatever brand you choose, whether it's custom gear, one with portable, XOP, Novix, you know what I mean? Whatever you can afford or what you like or what you come across at the time, it all works.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I just like the stand thing. I'm efficient at it. I feel comfortable in them, and I know they work, and I know I can get into the trees I need to get in typically. Yeah. So I'm with you 100% on that.
Yeah. What, speaking of like evolution, what did your broadhead evolution look like?
Honestly, man, it might be sort of boring as far as like a listener's perspective would be. I jumped on Muzzy broadheads and shot Muzzy fixed blade, like MX3s and MX4s until, 2015. I experimented with some other broadheads, some NAP ones.
Yep.
And then I shot Schwacker for a couple of years. And then I kind of found my home with Slick Trick broadheads. They have like the Raptor Trick is one of my favorite expandables. Yep. And then they have the Viper Trick, which is sort of similar to a Muzzy, but just kind of like engineered better. And I've just never had an issue with them. So I kind of Slick Trick, Viper Trick, Slick Trick, Raptor Trick are my two heads right now.
Yeah. I'll tell you this, when in 2006, you know, I bought this brand new bow, and I also brought, you know, like I bought everything new arrows, new rest, new sight. And I bought, the mechanical Wasp jackhammers, like one of the very first Wasps, mechanical broadheads that, you know, that were out. And since then, I can remember using three other broadheads outside of that. Like that's how long I've been shooting like a Wasp, Wasp heads. I can remember using the NAP Spitfire. I can remember using a Slick Trick. Man, what was it? One of their fixed blades. It's like a four blade fixed blade. I don't know the name of it.
Probably the Viper. Or what was the other one? I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So I love those small cutting or small broadheads with multiple, like four blades. I'm a huge fan of that. And then do you remember this broadhead called Epic? It's an Epic broadhead, and it was the first mechanical broadhead that all the blades were, there was no blade sticking out of the ferrule. It was all enclosed. So it looked like a fat field tip. But when you would hit it, all like three broadheads would come out. And I used that.
Was it red?
It was red. Yep.
Okay. I do remember it.
Yeah. But then in between all that, I kept going back to Wasp, and it's one, like you said, man, I feel like those heads slay. So that's the direction that I've stayed in.
Do they sponsor you? They should.
No, they do. They do.
Okay. I was going to try to help you out. I'm like, damn, you got to call somebody over there because that's a good story.
Right. Oh, and I'll tell you this, as far as sponsorship goes, they were the first company to jump on board with Nine Fingers. So, we got a really good relationship there.
Well, you found your home, man. You didn't even know it. That's awesome.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. Yep. So other than that, man, gear's kind of a funny thing to talk about. And, is there anything else in the gear department that, you want to bring up or talk about?
Man, I feel like I'm kind of lame. I feel like I like all my gear and stuff like that, but I think when people ask me about it, I'm more simple about it than I give myself credit for. I just kind of know what I like, and I don't really experiment too much. If I do, it takes a little bit for me to get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I will say one thing I do want to bring up that I think has changed my shot process in the heat of the moment is my release.
Yeah.
I don't know what you shoot, but I shoot a Scott Longhorn Hex.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a back tension with a click, but it's on a wrist strap, like a hunting release. That for me has been a game changer.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I had one in my hands to purchase at a bow shop, and then for some reason I put it back and I never picked it up. And I went back to my wrist trigger release that I've always been shooting. But that out of all the releases that I've used in the past, which isn't a lot, that one intrigues me the most. It's something that I'm definitely interested in. So it is it's a back tension release, but on a wrist strap.
Yeah. So you pull it back with the wrist strap.
Yeah.
Like the way I have it set up, I put my thumb and my pointer finger around the strap. I pull back, get anchored, and then I slide my fingers over the release and then run through my shot process.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to have to look into that a little bit more because I don't like the fact that I like some of these thumb releases, and I know you can, you know, figure ways out, like hook it to your D loop or, you know, even connect it to your wrist somehow, but you still have to hold it in your hand. And I don't know if I like that feeling.
I don't like that either, because I don't want to drop it or like get excited and go to grab my bow and it kind of like rattles, and then the trigger hits the string while it's hanging there, and then you're SOL.
Yeah.
Yep. That's why I've done it. But I like it because it slows me down. It keeps me from like getting frantic and dumping a trigger on, you know what I mean? Dumping an arrow off on a buck moving through, and I'm like, ah, shit, I should have slowed down and thought a little bit. It just makes me, like the way I practice it, I kind of walk myself through my rhythm. And I feel like since I switched to that release, I have significantly less oh shit mistakes in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, and that's a good thing, man. I'm still, I don't know, man, but when it comes to big deer in front of me, I'm still in a way, I feel like I'm in control, but I'm in blackout control, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
No, like, yeah, that's cool. Kind of like a fight in a way.
Right, right. Like what just happened? What, you know, like what did I do? I feel like I'm in control, but dude, I just want to say thank you very much for hopping on the podcast and BSing with us today. If you haven't listened to the Working Class Bow Hunter podcast, I strongly suggest it. These guys are great, and they take the BS session to a whole new level. Really good content. And so, man, appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. This was fun. Love to do it more often.